Let's see. Economists are actually sort of dull creatures, so I don't have any pretty pictures. I'm going to talk about work both that I've done and other work that people at the Center for Environmental Economics have done. So that consists of economists in the Econ Department, IRPS, and the Southwest Fisheries Science Center. And I should say we do lots of stuff with CNBC, and some of our people are working with Steve's group and elsewhere. So economists really are at the back end of this. So usually there's a lot of science and a lot of engineering sort of up front. So we're the tail end here. And so what happens is that every major federal regulation that costs the country over $100 million has to go through a benefit cost analysis. This is a full employment act for economists. But so in environmental economics, the problem is that lots of the environmental amenities that are bought and sold, a lot of them are not bought and sold in the marketplace, so economists come up with clever ways to put monetary values on those. For instance, you can look at a house in Los Angeles, stylized sort of three-bedroom, single-family house, and move it statistically from dirty air quality to the cleanest air quality, and the value of the house will change by about $75,000. You can say, how much more is an ocean view worth in La Jolla? And it's about $250,000. So lots of things there are other things. We look and see how long women walk in developing countries to get better clean water, because that's an indication of time. So a lot of effort goes into that. Earlier in my career, I came up with the value of preventing water shortages in California, and that was instrumental in preventing water shortages for about 25 years. And so we're now faced with the same problem again because we've lost lots of water. I did the benefit assessment for the U.S. Clean Water Act for the renewal and the damage assessment for the Exxon Valdez oil spill. I was in charge of that for the government. Currently, I'm working on a number of projects, one in Malaysia valuing a very large tract of rainforest on the Thai border, and a new study that's starting up with the World Bank and the Norwegian government looking at the Amazon. The next thing economists do is that they spend lots of money and time looking at how to incentivize conservation behavior. So here we'd look at the role of taxes and standards on what happens to motor vehicles. Some of that's in the safety range. So what happens is big vehicles crush little vehicles. So there are unanticipated consequences of all the SUVs on the road. We've worked on the optimal management of water reservoirs and the pricing of water. I have a paper that just came out on the incentives for replacing water heaters. We had some graduate students, and Josh Graf Ziffen did a great paper on solar panel purchases, which are interesting because there are two factors that drive the solar panel purchases other than the incentives. One is how green is the population in the zip code, and it turns out to be the people on the coast are greener than the people as you go inland. But the sun has exactly the opposite effect, and so you can tease out both effects there. I'm working on a very large study that Shirley will probably be interested in on plug-in hybrids and electric vehicles. That's for the California Air Resources Board that I'm doing with some people at UCLA. We have other people, Ted Groves and Joel Watson, have worked on how to structure conservation agreements in developing countries that NGOs do. Zhengji Zhang in IRPS has been doing lots of work on Chinese air pollution. It turns out that mayors and pollution control officials get credit if they have a blue sky day. And anyway, it just turns out there are a lot of days that turn out to be blue sky days and a big gap behind the reporting standard. I've worked on putting bulk storage on electric grids, and you have some unexpected consequences. You arbitrage the prices so that solar looks worse, wind looks better. And you also, in most parts of the U.S., would get more carbon dioxide emissions because you make baseload coal-fired power plants look better. Do a fair amount of work on pollution control agreements, one that Ralph and Kim are probably interested in, on what's the property of pollution control when you don't really know what the science is behind it. So I'm glad to see people working on that. And then there's very much a differential effect of carbon pricing in developing countries. The argument you hear from the Chinese and the Indians is it would make their country grow slower. We're pretty close to being able to show, at least for India, India would grow faster and China would probably go faster with carbon pricing. The third thing that economists do is forecast economic behavior. So eight out of the nine recessions in the U.S. post-World War II were driven by oil price shocks, including the current one. So Jim Hamilton, who's here, works on that. We've been doing lots of work on labor market and health impacts. I have a paper that shows that Bangladesh has lost 8% of its labor force hour due to arsenic in shallow tube wells. Josh Graf-Ziffen has been doing work on ozone exposure to farm workers and particulate exposure to pear packers in a paper he gave yesterday. And those effects are pretty big. Josh Graf-Ziffen has also looked at what happens to people's time use as a function of weather. Graham Elliott has been doing a lot of work on UCSD's power grid, where we've got lots of different technologies, and you need to be able to forecast at a very high frequency what the demand is going to be. Anyway, I will skip on. We do lots of work on fisheries because of our relationship with Southwest Fisheries and CNBC. I got a lot of attention when I forecasted Chinese greenhouse gas emissions. Not from the U.S. government. I sent in the paper, but I sent the paper to the British. And they said, come to London and give us a briefing. And Tony Blair, 3 days later, used the tagline from the paper in a major speech that the Chinese increase in emissions in 1 year were bigger than the UK's emissions in total. And I have a graduate student who's done a fascinating project looking at the impact of the business cycle on predicting emissions, which shows that the business cycle has a very asymmetric effect. And the amount of uncertainty that it introduces in the level of CO2 future emissions is very large. Okay. Done.